So this is a little bit of a deviation from what I've been doing the last 3 years. I'm going back a little bit to my roots to talk about mineral nutrition. And my goal here really is just to help you think about things as you select how to go about your mineral program. So first question, how many of you actually have a mineral program? How many of you provide supplement to your cattle? So I'd say 75% of you say you do. And the questions become, why do you, and how do you go about determining what you're going to supplement? As we think about mineral supplementation, it's actually a bit of a challenge. As a nutritionist, I think it's one of the most complicated components of formulating a ration because no mineral's an island. And what I mean by that is, as we think about any given mineral that we might supplement, it is affected by the other minerals and the other components in the diet in terms of its availability to the animal. So just looking at, say, for instance, the concentration of copper in your forage and saying, okay, I need to add X amount to meet my requirement, doesn't really work because we may have sulfur in the diet, and sulfur can negatively impact the absorption of copper, for instance. The same thing holds true for iron. We have high iron in our diet. It can negatively impact many of our trace minerals, zinc, copper, and manganese. And so as we think about this, we have to think about those interrelationships. So what are the minerals we need to be even considering? So we have two types of minerals, if we think about it that way. We have our macro minerals and our micro minerals, or our trace minerals. Our macro minerals are required in parts per hundred, so on a percent basis. So they're a little higher requirement in the diet. Those would be the calcium, magnesium, phosphorus, those type of minerals. And then we have our trace minerals, or our micro minerals, like iodine, cobalt, copper, manganese, which are required in parts per billion. I mean, extremely small, small amounts. Now, I say this, and everybody's going, wow. We know down to the part per million what their requirement is. So we must have this all honed in, and we should be able to supplement them exactly what they need. And the truth is that we're not as good as we may claim. Our requirements and our understanding of requirements, I would say, is a bit rudimentary. We think about what our requirements are based off of. A lot of that research was done in the 40s and 50s. Do you think cattle have changed since the 40s and 50s? Do you think their requirements have changed? I don't know. We haven't done the research to find out. I would guess if we have a greater growth rate that the minerals related with growth might actually be increased their requirement. Perhaps. Maybe not. What we have to do then is think about what do we see in terms of status and responses, right, to be able to provide suggestions. My first suggestion to you is I have yet to see a forage where we are low in sulfur. Now, there are. If you go down to Florida, they can have some sulfur deficiencies. But for the region we're talking about, the region you guys work in, we don't need to be providing supplemental sulfur. So we can mark that one off the list. Potassium's the same way. We do not need to be providing supplemental potassium in our forage-based diets. We're almost always above the requirement. I haven't seen a sample yet that wasn't, except for if I was going to feed nothing but straw. In general, as forages mature, our minerals concentrations do decrease. And so as we get into feeding a lot of low-quality forages, our supplementation program has to increase the amount of minerals. But how many of you feed only straw? Most of you are going to mix that with something like alfalfa hay, and that's going to provide enough potassium. So I typically don't worry about supplementing any potassium. The ones I do worry about, phosphorus, some cases we need to be thinking about that. Magnesium, because of secondary deficiencies, which I'll talk about in a minute. And then, of course, we're going to provide some salt to get some sodium into them, mainly as an intake driver. From the micro mineral or the trace mineral side of things, the two most common deficiencies that we see if you look at samples from range cows has been copper and zinc. And it makes sense because if we look at forages, those two typically are not in high enough concentrations to meet requirements. And we also have some challenges with antagonisms. And so those two things combine to make deficiencies more common. Iron, we do not need to be providing supplements. I know there was some work that came out. And again, this was in a different region where some supplemental iron was beneficial. But in this region, the forages tend to be double, if not triple, the concentration of iron we need. Iron is an antagonist to many of the other trace minerals on that list, which means that if I provide more iron, I'm decreasing the availability of those other ones. So all you're doing is really, in my opinion, hurting yourself. So what are our goals with providing supplemental minerals? It's really to prevent subclinical deficiencies. Clinical deficiencies, those kind of textbook classic symptoms that we talk about when we talk about what does the role of mineral A play in the body, those are very, very rare. I mean, we don't have those happen very, very often. What we do have is the potential for what we talk about as subclinical deficiencies. And the challenge with them is that the symptoms aren't easily observed, meaning they can be caused by multiple things. So if we look at this graph, if we think about mineral status as optimum being up here, as we decrease their mineral status, we start getting into some decreases in immunity, decrease in growth or fertility. And those are what we're talking about subclinical. So you can't go, oh, they don't have enough copper, and that's why I'm seeing a little bit more disease in my herd, right? Because it could be a million different things that are causing that. And so it makes it a challenge, right? How do we determine if I have a problem? Well, it's not an easy answer. Probably one of the best things we can do is think about what is in our diet, think about their needs, and then make a supplementation program based off of that. And that's what we're going to talk about today. One of the things that I want to make clear to everybody when we're talking about trace minerals in particular is that where we tend to see those subclinical deficiencies have to be with the calf at about 2 to 3 months of age. And it's because the calf is really reliant on stores that it built up when it was inside the cow. So it builds up stores of trace minerals in its liver, and then it is really dependent on that until it starts eating enough forage and enough feeds to get enough intake to meet its requirements, because milk is a very poor source of any trace mineral. And in fact, that's the reason why we don't have different requirements for trace minerals for a lactating cow versus a dry cow. They're the same, because there's not very much being excreted in the milk. So this is where we typically see our challenges in our cow-calf herds. Now, if any of you are thinking about the subclinical symptoms, and I said decrease in immunity, 2 to 3 months of age, what does that coincide with? Our maternal, right? Our maternal antibodies and the immunity of that calf. When do we start seeing those decrease? And the calf has to start relying on its own immunity. So the problem is, a lot of times you don't know whether that outbreak of disease is a mineral issue or an antibody issue. And indeed, I get a lot of calls and a lot of questions where somebody thinks that they have a mineral problem and maybe it's some other problem, like a pathogen issue in a field, for instance. I had a cow-calf producer, had 400 cows. He's had scours for 4 years and has had a lot of issues with his calves to the point where he's developed a whole trailer system that he goes around and essentially IVs calves. And for, I mean, literally, like, does this, and he has thought it's a mineral issue. And he has had, I mean, when I went and looked at all the different feeds he was feeding, all the different trace minerals that he was providing, it was amazing. So that's a lot of money he's spending. And if you looked at what his diet contained, you're like, there's no way they can be deficient. And indeed, he'd even gotten liver biopsies done and had found they look fine in terms of status. But to him and to the people who had sold him products, that's what the issue was. It wasn't a pathogen issue. And indeed, he hadn't moved calving fields. He had calved in that same field for 4 years and it had this issue. And so what I'm saying is they don't solve all your issues. But a good program is a good insurance and risk management for those immunity problems. Okay, the first challenge with developing a program is that concentration does not equal availability. And what I mean by that is that a nutrient is not in the body until it's absorbed. Sorry, this is I'm not a good artist, so I went and found one off the internet, and this looks like a dairy cow, right? But you can think about an animal as a donut. If I stick my finger through that donut hole, is my finger in the donut? No, right? It's the same thing with an animal eating something. It is not actually in the animal until it is absorbed. And that's our first barrier, is the absorption. And so we talk about bioavailability. You'll hear people discussing bioavailability of different mineral sources. And that's really what we're talking about. How well can it be absorbed? The other challenge is antagonisms. And so we talk about antagonists, we're really just talking about one element is inhibiting the absorption or transport of another. The classical example would be sulfur and molybdenum antagonizing copper and making it unavailable. And so for those of you who have high sulfur water, you've probably heard of that and have a challenge with getting enough copper into your animal. That's a classic antagonism. We talk about secondary deficiencies, and secondary deficiencies, essentially, the concentration of that mineral may be adequate in the diet, but other things are interfering with its absorption such that you are actually having a deficiency. This is the problem. These minerals are all interrelated. If I have high phosphorus, for instance, I can negatively impact magnesium absorption. So now I can't just look at my manganese. I'm going to get in trouble. Magnesium's the macro. Manganese is the micro. But I might have enough manganese in my forage, but now if I feed a lot of a byproduct that has a lot of phosphorus in it, I may cause myself not to have enough manganese absorbed. It's a challenge. Grass tetany would be the best example of a deficiency, of a secondary deficiency that most of you have probably heard of, right? You have a lush growing cool season grass in the spring. And we have enough magnesium in that forage source to meet her requirements. However, we have high potassium and high nitrogen, and they interfere with the absorption of that magnesium in the rumen, and we get grass tetany. What do we do? Well, we feed them some more magnesium, right? That's our option there. But just looking at the concentration in the forage wouldn't have told us what we needed to know. We also have to realize that there's some interrelationships that we have to evaluate. Okay, so this is just one example of some mineral content, and this is on meadow hay. And it's actually an average over many years. I will tell you, year to year, you will see variability in the mineral content of your forage. And so if you want to customize your mineral mix, you're going to need to take samples over several years. We will see changes due to the stage of maturity of the forage as well as the type of forage. But there's some key things that are pretty consistent in terms of where we have challenges with our forage-based diets. The first one that I wanted to highlight in red here is just phosphorus. Phosphorus tends to be kind of borderline. If we're a dry cow and we have reasonably immature forages, we're fine. We usually don't need to be supplementing phosphorus. And then, by the way, phosphorus is the most expensive mineral to supplement. So if you do nothing but figure out when you actually need to be supplementing, you could save yourself a lot of money. However, if they're lactating, we may find that we don't quite have enough phosphorus to meet their needs. Now, I say that, and what if you're providing some supplement? What if I'm going to provide a little bit of distillers in the diet, for instance? It's a great source of phosphorus, so then I don't need to provide it in the mineral. So we need to think about what are we providing to them and evaluate phosphorus. That would be the first one I'd always look at, because a lot of times you'll get a commercial mix and it'll have some phosphorus in there because they want to avoid this issue where we might be a little bit low. However, if you don't need it, you're spending money that you don't need to spend, right? The other ones that tend to be low is manganese, zinc, and copper. And I already told you zinc and copper are the two most common deficiencies. The challenge here, if we look at zinc, for instance, here's the requirement. It's 30 parts per million, and we're somewhere around half of that. So you say, oh, great, I need to provide about half of their requirement. Well, how available are these trace minerals in the forage? How bioavailable are they? I'll tell you, we don't have a great number. What we suggest and what we typically formulate based off is, say, 50% of that is bioavailable. So now I'm down to about a quarter of their requirement being available to them, and I got to provide 75% of their requirement. Copper would be the same way here. So we're about half, but now I'm going to say only 50% of that will be absorbed. And so now I got to increase that, which becomes a challenge, right? So if we think about those mineral contents that I just showed you, now I'm going to put a caveat in there and say they're meaningless. They're not meaningless, but every system is a little bit different. Your land versus your neighbor's land, you may have a different profile for your forage. And it's because pH of the soil impacts the root uptake and plant concentrations, for instance. That's plant species and what your animal might be selecting affects the concentrations that they'll be getting. And, of course, this is a big one, stage of plant maturity. If nothing else, understanding how stage of plant maturity affects the concentrations. As plants get more mature, in general, concentrations go down. So if you're thinking, for instance, you're ranging dormant range, concentrations of minerals that you're going to want to supplement is going to be higher than when you're on your spring, midsummer lush forages, we'll say. This, in my mind, is probably one of the best things. If you have 100 cows or more, taking samples of your forage over time throughout your season and evaluating your concentrations and working with a nutritionist or an extension professional to develop some custom mineral mixes, it's probably one of the best things you can do in terms of saving money. Because you can target it to your needs and not be supplying something that you don't need, and make sure you're supplying something that you do. But it does take time. I would say I would have at least 3 years of samples before I would make huge adjustments to my supplementation program. Okay, I'm going to get thrown out of the room by somebody. There's this philosophy that cattle have nutritional wisdom, and it's developed because if cattle were phosphorus deficient, for instance, you can see them gnaw on wood or bones, the idea of pica, right? The problem is that, indeed, they do have some nutrient-seeking behaviors when they're extremely deficient, but we're not getting to that point. We're looking at subclinical deficiencies, and I don't know about you, but I personally don't do a very good job of balancing my diet. I don't eat to provide what I need. I eat because something is palatable, right? Tastes good. There's some people who like potato chips and some people who don't. Is that because one person needs more potatoes or the nutrients in potatoes, right? No, it's not, right? It's because you like it. It's palatable to you. It's the same thing with our mineral supplements. Some find salt more palatable than others, and so they'll eat more than others. Some find it less palatable. For instance, if you have a lot of solids in your water, you'll find that the same formulation of mineral that you put out to your herd will have intake that might be half of somebody else's herd who doesn't. And it's because the salt isn't as palatable. It is salt-driven for most of our mineral supplements, and it's just based off of palatability. So, again, this custom mineral mix is kind of nice because we can change the formulation based off of making sure we're getting them to eat what we are targeting. Add more salt, add less salt. Maybe I've got to add molasses or some other palatability driver. But they're not eating because I need more copper or I need less copper. They're eating typically because something is palatable. So salt is usually used as the main driver. Sometimes it doesn't work on some ranches and some herds, and so we have to think about something else. I usually start here because it's the cheap one, and it works fairly well in most situations, but not all. Okay, so I wanted to just take 1 minute to talk about calcium and phosphorus, but in particular, I told you that phosphorus is the one we need to worry about. Calcium is usually at a high enough concentration in our forages. The challenge is that they're linked. If you overfeed phosphorus, for instance, things that are signaled to excrete some of that phosphorus also excrete calcium. And so what we have to do is if we overfeed phosphorus, we've got to bump up our calcium. So for cows, I typically suggest we really look at a 1-to-1 ratio of calcium to phosphorus. So if I'm feeding some byproducts, I'm probably going to up the amount of calcium that's in my mineral. Okay, I'm going to step into another landmine here and talk about sources. And really, there are differences among sources and the bioavailability of those sources, meaning how much of a particular source, if I fed a gram of some mineral, what proportion of that would actually get into the body of that animal. They're different. When we talk about even within inorganic sources, there's differences. For instance, copper oxide is only about 15% bioavailable. So if I feed it, only about 15% of it actually gets into the animal. If I use a sulfate, copper sulfate, we would say it's 100% bioavailable. Now, I want to tell you 100% is not correct. It's because we're using that as the basis to compare everything to. When we look at absorptions of copper, for instance, we're really only looking at about 15 to 20% on average if you were to look at any source. But we use that as our basis, and that's what our requirements are based off of, if that makes sense to you. So it's kind of a misnomer, but it's a good relative difference between the two. So if I was to feed copper oxide, I'd need to feed a lot more of it to meet their requirements than if I was to feed copper sulfate. So looking at the source is important. In particular, sulfates and carbonates are fairly available. Then we get into some of the other sources, right? So the organic sources. Are they more available? Sometimes, yes, they are. Do I need to use them? Well, do you have a problem meeting their requirements with the organics? If you do, maybe there's a place for them. Are they cheaper relative to the organics on a bioavailability relative basis, right? So if I say they're 130% of bioavailability, so they're 30% more than sulfates, well, are they less than 30% more expensive? That's kind of the way I look at them. Now, there are some places, for instance, another source of trace minerals. How many of you heard of an injectable trace mineral? A few of you, right? They also have a place, right? Their benefit is that you can ensure that every animal got a dose and you can bypass the absorption route, right? Because you can get it directly into them. So do they have a role? Maybe. If I have a situation where I have a problem, my cows have low status, and I want to bring that up before a key time point in their life cycle, sure. But I do want to make sure that everybody understands that trace minerals are not a silver bullet, and there's not any kind of extra benefit, for instance, of if I feed a little, it's good. If I feed more, it's better, right? Your goal here is to meet their requirements. Beyond that, are you going to get extra benefits? Probably not. There are a few things where we talk about super nutritional benefits, but in general, my goal with the supplementation program is just to meet their needs. Okay, so one last thing in your proceedings. I have some suggestions for kind of what I look at when I look at a mineral tag, if I'm trying to find one for a producer. And really my goal here was just to get you to think about how much will be supplied by a particular free choice mineral, if it's a 4-ounce or a 2-ounce. First thing, if it's a 2-ounce mineral supplement, you're going to need it to be twice as concentrated as a 4-ounce to provide the same amount of mineral to that animal. That makes sense. That's pretty easy. If I feed a pound a day supplement, then a pound a day would be 16 ounces. I just need to divide that by 4 to have the same amount being supplemented to the animal. Makes sense to everybody? The other thing I wanted to point out is if you go back and look at your forage sources and start looking at these concentrations, we typically, for copper, for instance, her requirement is 10 parts per million. We're typically going to suggest you to provide at least her requirement. Why? One is because that forage source doesn't have but 25% of her requirement in there. Two is because we have a lot of potential antagonists in the diet. And so we tend to hedge our bets. The same thing with zinc. We usually say we're going to provide 15 to our half to two-thirds of her requirement. And manganese is one that gets debated. I've seen manganese deficiency twice in my life, both of which were kind of different circumstances. One was high aluminum in the soil and in the water, and it was an antagonist to manganese. And the second one was a lot of soil contamination in silages, because iron becomes more available in the silage, and thus it was antagonizing manganese. So some people suggest that they don't need to provide any in our supplements. I usually go with at least 10 part per million, but again, that's debatable. And then the other one I wanted to point out is really calcium and phosphorus. Look at your supplement. Look at your forages. If your forages are providing enough phosphorus, don't add any more because it's just expensive. Okay, I tried to make up our time. Did we get anywhere? All right, we made up our time. And I'll be here this evening.